Welcome to the TeacherCast Educational Network, coming to you from the TeacherCast studios since 2011. Join us each week as we bring you the latest educational news, EdTech updates, and hottest interviews with today's most influential leaders in education. And now, for your host, Jeff Bradbury.
Everybody, and welcome to the TeacherCast Educational Network. My name is Jeff Bradbury. Thank you for joining us today and making TeacherCast your home for professional development. On this episode of the Jeff Bradbury Show, we're going to be talking all about digital marketing, building your brand, and how to infuse artificial intelligence to build the systems to make your life a little bit easier. So no matter if you're a website creator, entrepreneur, author, podcaster, any type of content creator, as an educational specialist, this is a fantastic episode for you. Today's episode is brought to you by my brand new book, Impact Standards. You can find out more information over on teachercast.net/standards. If you are looking to help build an instructional coaching department, if you are an administrator out there trying to figure out how to determine the best pathway after creating your strategic plan, and if you're figuring out how you can get your teachers to create some dynamic lessons each and every day, check out my brand new book, Impact Standards, Designing District Systems That Power K-12 Learning Today. You can find it on Amazon over at teachercast.net/standards. My guest today is an entrepreneur, investor, and digital marketing expert with over 25 years of experience building and scaling businesses of all sizes. He's best known for great websites such as akomarketing.com, promotionalproducts.com, and he's the co-founder of achievers.com. I want to bring on today Mr. David Burnett. Dave, how are you today? Welcome to TeacherCast.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeff. I appreciate it. I'm doing well. It's an interesting day. A little warm here. You know, we're getting up into the triple digits, but I think you know enough about triplets to be able to talk about that a little bit. But yeah, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
It has been amazing here. It's as I'm looking at this, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's 95 degrees. And, you know, as the weather is getting warmer, there are so many educators out there right now that are trying to figure out how to spend time over the summer. So many educators right now are building their brands. They're launching their books. They're making their podcasts go. They're doing presentations. They're trying to figure out how do they start to build some kind of a persona outside of that classroom. I am so happy to have you on today to talk a little bit about branding, a little bit about marketing, how AI works. Before we get into all those topics, tell our audience a little bit about yourself. How did you get into marketing, and how did you start something as amazing as AOK Marketing?
So it was an accidental thing, to be completely honest. I was in university, my first business back in the late 90s. And what I did was I was working for somebody who was, as part of a marketing company, we did point of purchase sampling. You ever been to Costco? Somebody comes by and like wants to feed you something. That's what we were doing, except we were doing it for alcohol in stores. So, you know, having done that, having worked with that agency, I thought to myself, I can do this. So I went out and got a couple of large customers when I was in third year university. I worked with Sleeman Breweries, if you're familiar with them. I worked with Labatt's. I worked with Bacardi. And so I was running a business. I had 50 employees across the province. I'm based out of Toronto, Canada. So across the province, I had 50 employees, as well as going to school full time and having a full time girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, and who is actually now a grade three teacher, a third grade teacher. So I can really resonate with your audience. And but that's how I got into the marketing side of things. I just thought to myself, you know what? I can give out free booze better than anybody else can. And so that's kind of it.
That was probably really popular in college, I bet.
It was my personality. It wasn't the fact that I had a minivan full of booze, really, and I would show up at keg parties and supply the booze for basically nothing. It had nothing to do with that. It was all just because I was a nice guy.
So one day your calendar was free, and the next day you just had your month book, I bet.
It was a lot of fun for sure. And it was, the best part was we got paid by the alcohol companies to do this because this was part of the target market. So I was a 21-year-old with a minivan full of booze with lots of friends in the target market. So it worked out really well for everybody involved.
You know, many podcasters, authors, speakers that are in this education world are trying to figure out and have been trying to figure out how to do it, how to make it out there. And I don't think that a lot of people actually understand some of the basic terms in the business. How do you define the term marketing? Let's just start at the basics here, because if you don't know what it is, it's going to be really hard to do it.
Yeah, well, for me, I like to try and operationalize, make things as operational as possible. So marketing is really the action of getting known. So whatever you're doing to raise awareness, to get known in one way or the other, is technically marketing. You probably think of traditional channels like TV or radio or podcasts or digital ads or those types of things, but it's really just getting known and how you're getting known. And that can be everything from a newsletter to word of mouth is another way to get known, but you don't necessarily have as much control over that. So there's a lot of different ways to get known, and that's what marketing is.
Now, when you got started, obviously you had a niche audience there, I would imagine, people who like to consume. At what point did you decide that you need more than just word of mouth and a pickup truck full of kegs? At some point, I would imagine you put yourself into a position where you needed to do traditional marketing, a newsletter, all of those different types of digital products. What was that transition for you? How did you get started on that? And what advice do you have for any educator out there that's sitting there with that newsletter going, I don't know what to do?
So for me, it was all about cold outreach, outbound. There's really only, and I know that's not everybody's most favorite thing to talk about, but there's really only a few ways that you can get known by yourself. If you're an individual, there's only a few ways. The first one is you can reach out to people who know who you are. So you already have a network on Facebook or whatever platform you happen to be on social media. That's one way. Those people know who you are. You can reach out to them. Second way is cold outreach. So people who don't know who you are. So that would be being able to reach out to publishers, being able to reach out to potential partners, being able to reach out to other people who haven't heard of you before, but would potentially be interested in whatever it is that you're promoting. The third way that you can do it is through free content, like a podcast. That is a great way to get known. And there's a lot of other free content on social media that you can basically get known that way. And then the last way is through paid ads. So if you have some content, you can promote it via paid ads by you going out, opening up your wallet, spending a bit of money, and spreading the word and spreading your reach to those types of people. So those are really the only four ways that you can get known for anybody doing it by yourself.
One of the things that I've seen you talk about a lot is finding that niche audience. And I can't tell you how many times I've talked to podcasters, authors, you know, people in that kind of an ilk going, you know, my audience is teachers. And I keep going, well, what kind of teachers? Who do they want? What do you need? And I'm trying to help them create that brand profile of who is your customer? Who's your target audience? I sometimes say, who's your avatar? What advice do you have for anybody that's looking to hone down that destination, right? Like, for instance, this show is not for educators. It's for educators who have a brand, a product, a podcast, something that they want to build their business off of, right? So it's a smaller subset. How do you help people find that niche audience and then drill that one deep?
Well, there's an old saying that the riches are in the niches. You know, your niche audience is probably bigger than you think it is. Like, not just yourself, but anybody who's listening. There are so many people in the US, there's so many people in Canada, there's so many people globally that you can make a lot of money or create a lot of awareness or whatever your goal may be based on whatever your niche is. So finding your niche is a really interesting thing, because right now AI is so big that anybody can basically appear to be expert-ish on just about anything, right? Using ChatGPT or Gemini or Claude or whatever tool you want to use. So really what separates you is what you've done. Nobody else can... No AI tool can say I've done this thing, whatever that thing may be. Like, no AI tool could say I started a business in college and got all my friends drunk and got paid for it at the same time. Like, there's no AI tool that can say that, right? But lots of people could say, here's how you define a niche audience, right? So what I would do is start off with doing stuff. I'm assuming most of the people who are listening to this have done some stuff, whatever that stuff may be. You may have taught fifth grade for 20 years, whatever that thing may be, you have specialized knowledge associated with that, and talk about that specialized knowledge. Maybe you've got, particular expertise with people who have special needs. Maybe you've got particular expertise associated with a learning tool. Maybe you're developing something, those types of things. It's what sets you apart? What makes you different? And then who needs that thing? So just to build on that fifth grade example, there are a lot of fifth grade teachers who could use whatever it is that you've got. So just being able to understand what it is that you've got and get it out there would be valuable to them. So I think it's almost your responsibility to do it.
Now, you had mentioned before we got started here that there's other avenues that you kind of market yourself in. I know a lot of people listening to this have that teachers pay teachers thing, or maybe they have an Etsy store, or maybe they're trying to make it in some of these already established marketplaces. What's your thoughts on building your own home for where you sell things, your websites, your things like that, versus starting it out on a teachers pay teachers on an Etsy?
Yeah, I think you need to have both. You need channels of distribution, but you also need a centralized place of your own. So as you mentioned, I do actually have an account on Teachers Pay Teachers. My wife is a third grade teacher. So she was like, hey, I'm looking at this thing. And she showed it to me. And so I put up some products and we've made some money just for fun because it was something that I could do and helped her with that. She's not very technology. She's not an early adopter. Let's put it that way. And so it was a bit of a hesitation for her to do it. So for me, you want to have some owned real estate somewhere on the internet. You need to have that because if you are dependent on an Etsy or a Facebook marketplace or a Teachers Pay Teachers, and something happens where all of a sudden you get shut down, your account gets hacked, whatever, something negative happens on that particular platform, all of a sudden, all of your income potential goes away. But if you have your own controlled assets online, you can then basically utilize those. And as long as you don't mess up your own thing, then you're good to go. And you can use simple platforms like Shopify. So Shopify is a product-based platform, costs like $30 a month, and you can have lots of different products, whatever it is you might be selling up online. If you're selling a book or if you're selling some other kind of swag stuff you give away with your logo on it, or digital products, you can sell a lot of different things through something as simple as a Shopify store.
I often have the conversation with people of, do you start a blog as an example on your own website, or do you join a Medium or a Substack or something to that effect? But like a Teachers Pay Teachers, the market is there. The payment gateways are there. The audience is certainly there. You've got the search engine there, or you build it on your own product because you own that. And obviously I agree with you. Have a little bit of here, have a little bit of there. But my question I always have is, well, do you put the same stuff out? Do you make now double the content? Are you posting 1 week on my site, 1 week on Teachers Pay Teachers, on 1 week on my... How do you start to put together a strategy for all this?
Well, it really depends on what you're selling before I would be able to give kind of any specific advice. But general advice is, yes, you want your own unique content on your own platform. And again, that comes down to telling your own story. You can modify that, repackage it, and then adjust it to a Teachers Pay Teachers or some other platform if you're building digital products. But you want to make sure that you look after your own real estate first before you go to some of these distribution channels. Now, they're great, like a Medium, you get great exposure. You can do a lot of different things with it, but you want to be able to have unique content on each place. So to kind of put this in a bit of a different perspective, say, for example, you have a t-shirt and it's like a Hanes t-shirt. Hanes has the original t-shirt listing online. I'm going to get a little technical here, but Hanes has the original t-shirt listing. But then you might be able to go to, Trader Joe's may sell it, or a Walmart may sell it, or a Costco may sell it. It's all the same t-shirt. So Google knows what the main, the original listing is, and the appropriate place for the original listing by something called canonical listings. So really technical, but basically Google knows what was first as long as you've got it set up correctly. So if you're going to post product, post it on your own site first. So Google knows it's first there. And then if you want to duplicate it, change the description, change some of the text, change a bunch of different things. So it looks like a unique second product, but it's really the same as the first product. You can do that. But if you create just duplicates and you duplicate your product on your own site, on Etsy, on Amazon, on whatever else, then Google's only going to show one result, odds are, for that particular product.
It's interesting to hear you put it that way. I follow so many people both on their website blogs, and then just for fun, I'll find their LinkedIn blogs, or I'll find, you know, some other, just to see if they're serving the same content, to see how different they're serving it. Is it 80% the same, but the first couple paragraphs are a little different? When you're trying to diversify, how different does somebody need to be? There's only so many different ways you can take a podcast and slice it up.
As different as you can. That would be the thing. And depending on what platforms that you're choosing. So if you're starting out and you've already got a great following on Instagram, just whatever it may be, stick to Instagram. There's a huge market there on Instagram to do all these different things. If you're big on X, stay on X. If you're big on TikTok, go TikTok. Like, you don't have to master all of the channels all at once. You can do really, really good work on any one channel. And if you're not on any other channel, what I would recommend is taking a look at the biggest players in your space. Do a little R&D, which I term as rip off and duplicate. So if you do a little rip off and duplicating of what has worked, then you can build on that. You say, okay, this particular, as you say, going and looking at somebody on their blog, going and finding them on LinkedIn, where do they have a larger following? Wherever their larger following is, what type of content is resonating with their users? See if they're serving the same fifth grade audience. What do those people resonate towards? What is serving them well? And then building on those same platforms where that other audience, where the audience already exists. It's going to be very difficult for you to build an audience where one doesn't exist already, but it's very easy for you to divert their attention if they're already there. So that's what you want to think of.
Let's dive back to that moment where you're sitting there serving out of your back seat and you had all your friends in that party. At some point in time,
just for clarity, I don't remember that moment.
At some point in time, you must have had an aha moment, right? In education, we call it a teachable moment. Sometimes we call it the aha moment, but you know, you went from there to, let's just take, for instance, your website promotional products. You're selling chargers and pins and coasters. And how did you make that transition that says not everybody is a college frat person? We need to come up with a different revenue stream here. What was that progression like for you?
Well, I think it's an excellent question. I think the bigger thing is that I also own a digital agency, AOK Marketing, that actually, I started in business before Google was invented. So the fact that I own an agency that optimizes for Google search is kind of ironic. And for me, it wasn't necessarily an aha moment. It was the realization that I had to continue to learn to be able to adapt to what's coming next. So the biggest thing for me was realizing, okay, as the internet, like I was in university in the late 90s, all of the internet was coming online. There was the dot-com bubble, all that kind of good stuff. But more recently, I was a beta tester for OpenAI for ChatGPT back in 2018, 2019, before ChatGPT was a thing. But that was just a function of being able to look around, pay attention to what is the hot next thing that's coming. So for me, the aha moment is realizing that what we're serving today isn't necessarily going to serve us tomorrow. So to circle back around to promotionalproducts.com, universities still order t-shirts, university frat parties still order red cups. You know, like we still do serve that audience, but we also serve corporations. We also serve individuals who have, you know, they're trying to celebrate something. We do serve a lot of that, but it really comes down to being adaptable, being willing to change, being open to what's coming next and seeing how you can apply something that used to work or work somewhere else to this new environment.
So you can do red cups with company logos now.
Absolutely.
It's awesome.
Are you going to order some? I know a guy.
So. I would love to get red cups with each of the triple spaces on them. We can just, we'll go into business together with all that.
Absolutely.
Coasters would even be good too. You can just put your drink right on the top of the cupboard or something like that. I hope they don't listen to this episode.
They will eventually.
Right. I wanted to pick up on something that you mentioned. You mentioned Google search, and like I'm an internet junkie. I'm a Google search junkie. I try to follow as much of that stuff as possible because I like talking about it. I like learning about it. Do we still live in a world today where keywords and rankings is all of that stuff still relevant in a world where you can just type in an AI prompt and given the quality of that prompt, you know, it used to be where if you knew how to do that stuff, you're going to rank. And if not, you're just writing a blog post. Now you can basically prompt your way into this kind of a knowledge, as you've already mentioned. Where are you these days with Google searches and AI generated? And, you know, people are using AI as if it was a basic Google search. Let's just face it on that.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because it's just where we are right now is search is getting more fragmented, right? We've had kind of 20 years of the same. Google is the, you know, the leader. I mean, there's a bit of Bing search and, you know, DuckDuckGo and a bit of other stuff, but Google is the leader. You want the best search results. You go and you search at Google and that's what you do. I mean, in the 06 through 10 through 15, you know, social media came on and kind of fragmented some of that search. Some of that search has now gone to YouTube, right? If you're searching for videos, there's a big search there. If you're now searching for answers on TikTok, you can find answers there. You're searching on any of the social media. So search was already being fragmented, but the volume of people globally and in the States was always growing. So now what's happened is AI is fragmenting search further. So the way I like to think about it is if you go into Google and you search for Starbucks, you'll get starbucks.com, some information about the company, you know, that kind of stuff. If you search for Starbucks near me, you're going to get three or four results with a map. And if you search for Starbucks Frappuccino, you're going to get a link to the Frappuccino page. But if you search like what's in a Starbucks Frappuccino, you're going to get an AI generated overview of all the different ingredients about Starbucks, maybe talk a little bit about Starbucks, that kind of stuff. But those are four distinct types of searches. You've got, you know, commercial intent, you've got informational intent, you've got transactional intent, you've got a bunch of different types of searches. Where the AI overviews and AI is taking over is on those informational searches. As I gave the example of the, you know, what's in a Starbucks coffee, they'll get better and take over more searches. But anything that you would have previously looked up on Wikipedia is what AI is taking over right now. So if you were going to put something like, give me a great example of a fifth grade curriculum, and I have no idea why I'm picking on fifth grade. Hopefully there's some wonderful fifth grade teachers, but give me a fifth grade curriculum for math. All right. That's what I want. It could give you that because it's informational, right? But if you were like, I want to buy a textbook for a fifth grade math class, it's not going to give you an AI overview. It's going to give you links to textbooks, to Amazon or whatever, wherever else you would find your textbook, Harper's Collins, whatever, where you would find your textbooks. That's what it's going to do. So Google, the machine, is getting smart enough to know what type of search you are entering. And it's going to take some of them and answer them for you. And some of them, you're still going to get traditional search results.
I would imagine that's helping you determine what kind of content you should be making. I mean, it used to be in education, everyone's making instructional videos. Okay, LearnLM now does that for you. You can go and find it, VO3O or whatever it's called now.
Like, VO3, yeah.
VO3 will now make a video that says, how do you bold text in Microsoft Word? We don't have to make that anymore.
Yeah.
So even I'm sitting here going, okay, well, what is the future of content creation if it's done for you right now?
Well, there's a lot of AI, you know, there's also Khan Academy and there's a bunch of different things that are there that are tools to be used, right? It's like being a carpenter. I kind of look at it like being a carpenter. For a long time, Google was a hammer and a nail, right? We now have a drill that goes with our hammer. So we, you know, and AI is that drill. So just being able to use the tool. So people will absolutely use tools like VO3. And VO3, if you're not familiar with it out there, it's a Gemini product, which is a Google product, which can do up to 8 seconds of video generated with visuals and text and audio. Like, it's amazing. It's almost cinema quality, very difficult to tell. But it only does 8-second versions, right? Is there going to be a longer 45-second version? Is there going to be a longer 5-minute version? Absolutely. Those are coming. I don't know when, but for sure they're going to be coming in the future. So as a result of that, again, it comes back to what makes you different, right? Like if anybody could say, here's how you bold text in Excel, anybody could say that. Like you're not really necessarily adding value in that particular case. But if you're like, you know what, when I was working with these 5 autistic students and these 5 autistic students all had this similar, the similar blocks that they played with and they really learned a lot. It helped them progress with their reading level or whatever it may be. Then that is something that AI isn't just going to make up, right? So being able to be a thought leader, being able to be original, taking the experience you've got and what you've learned and actually sharing that is going to be tremendously valuable, and that's going to be hard to replace.
I think the goal here, and this is just kind of the mantra that I've taken on over the last couple of years. TeacherCast has been running for 14 years now, and it's always I always try to beat out the stuff that I've done. I try not to look at what other podcasters are doing or other authors are doing. One of the things that I know you've mentioned before, and I kind of buy into this theory, is this concept of this infinite game, and just the idea that, you know, it just keeps going and it just keeps going. I keep asking myself, because, you know, we're hitting that 14-year mark next month in July, going, okay, what do I do this year? What do I do differently? What do I do this? And I'm like, well, do I try to beat different metrics? Do I try to start something new? What is your theory on entrepreneurship? What is your theory on doing this for as long as, I don't want to say we, but you've done it? I didn't mean it that way. That's not
you're,
what I mean.
You're dating me now. I did talk about my college experience in the late 90s, so I guess I am dating myself a little bit.
I didn't mean it that way. But but I mean, look, I buy into the theory that this is infinite. I buy into the theory that I'm challenging myself every day to get up and to create and to do this on top of all of the other things that we have going on in our lives.
Yeah.
What's your philosophy with the whole infinite game, infinite wisdom, all those different things?
Well, for me, and I don't know if this resonates with everybody, but my definition of games is really based from Simon Sinek. And mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody in the, or a number of the people in the audience probably know who he is. A great, great educator. But he actually has this theory that there are finite games and infinite games. And the easiest way to kind of think about a finite game is like a basketball game, a football game, a hockey game, has defined rules, a start and a stop, and a very clear winner and loser. An infinite game doesn't have those things. There's no necessarily defined rules. There's no necessarily start and stop, and there's no real defined winner and loser. In business and in entrepreneurship, people always talk about competition. People always talk about winning and losing on that side of things. But I view the goal of being in business as staying in business. I've been through the dot-com bubble in business. I've been through the Great Recession. I've been through COVID. And still being in business after those three things is, I'm pretty happy with that. Yeah. Like that is a win. I don't know what game that particular win was, but it's a win. But
that's a win to you.
Oh, absolutely.
So right? Like nobody else has that on their scoreboard. That was his point, right? There's no scoreboard that says I beat you at longevity, right? Like
no, it's me versus me, right? Like it's, so I look at the infinite game as, am I doing the best and the most possible that I can. So one of the things that, I don't necessarily share all the time is that back in the end of 2018, I suffered a traumatic brain injury. I had a severe concussion. It was an accident that happened around a home renovation project. I got hit in the side of the head with a metal bar, and I don't remember 2019, and I don't remember the first half of 2020. I make the worst joke ever because I say things like, I heard there was a pandemic and like nobody gets it except for me, because I'm the only person who doesn't remember the first part of the pandemic. So as a result of that, for me, the infinite game was really, how can I get my memory back? How can I interact with people? I lost some speech. I didn't have a memory, you know, like I had a long-term memory, but no short-term memory. Like there was a lot of issues that I had to overcome. And as a result of that, it was just staying in the game. And I had the two businesses at that time, great team members, amazing people who were able to run the business while I was literally spending 15 minutes working, 45 minutes sleeping, 15 minutes working, 45 minutes sleeping. I did that for 3 months the first 3 months after my injury, and then basically started to pick back up until I could get to like a full day's work. And that took a year, year and a half to do. And so for me, winning the infinite game is the battle against yourself, right? You have the choice, and I don't judge. People, like, do what you want. If you want to watch Netflix, there's some great shows. I love that. Like, there's some great things. That's how I unwind. It's awesome. You want to spend all your time watching Netflix? More power to you, right? Like, go for it. For me, it really comes down to, is that the best use of my time, given the limited time I have on this earth, given the fact that I now have the gift of being able to remember what I did yesterday? Is that the way I want to spend my time? And sometimes, absolutely. Other times, not so much. So for me, the infinite game really is, how long can you stay in the game? You know, I often, my wife is 6-7 years away from retirement. And she's like, I can hardly wait until October 1st, 2032, right? Like, it's like, I know this date. And I look at it as an entrepreneur and I'm like, I totally get it, right? Like, this was the agreement when she signed up. This is how long she's going to work. This is when she gets the full pension, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Totally get it. And the goal is to then travel and do a bunch of other things. But I am going to continue to work. And she knows that. Like, there is no stopping for me. And that's not a bad thing, because for me, at least, I really enjoy what I do. So is it really work? Or is it just, instead of gardening, I entrepreneur? Like, if that's a thing.
It's an interesting concept. And yes, I binge listen to Simon's talks a lot, especially with me right now. I'm getting ready for a big conference. I've had him on a loop just to kind of channel in, you know, presentation skills. 14 years is a long time. I've often said I've been up and down through 5 different generations of educational podcasting, right? Wow. When we started, it was 2 guys and their iPhones. That was the joke. And then it became Google Hangouts on Air. And then it went to Blab. And then it went to Anchor. And then it went to now Spotify. And it's all these little variations. And it's been fun watching it go up and down, because every time it goes up, then you have teachers wanting to teach podcasting to their students.
Yep.
But then it goes back down again. And to your point, I'm still here. And I love it when, you know, you go to conferences and people are like, dude, I've been listening to you forever now. Or, hey, I remember, you know, I was on your show back in the, and I like, okay. And it is that. For me, you're challenging yourself. You know, last year, the goal was, I'll do the shameless plug, can you put the book out? Yeah. And this took me 12 years to put together. It took me, so much time. How do you keep handling all of that stuff? Now, this is a difficult question I'm going to ask, but I ask this of all my entrepreneur guests. What motivates you to keep going? And don't say money. You can't say money.
No. And it's not money. I think if your goal is money, that's a really, I think there's no polite way to say this, but you're out of alignment if money is the goal. Money is a byproduct of work well done and value given. So it comes, if you give enough value, you will get paid for it. And that's really kind of how it works. And if your goal is the thing that's a byproduct, once you get it, you just move the goalposts, you're gonna want more. Anyways, I don't want to go off on money. Money is great. I love money. More money, the better. I don't want to put that out in the universe. It's great. But so to circle back around, for me, there isn't a choice. Like, I'm driven by things that have happened in my past that have made me realize how fortunate I am to be where I am and to be able to do the things I do. So for me, it's a waste for me to not do everything I can. Mm. And so I get out of bed at 5 in the morning, every morning, and I'm like, let's go. Like, what do we got? What do we got going on today? Do I do the most meaningful work every day? Absolutely not. Do I do the drudgery associated with whatever? Absolutely. Is something that I loved turned into a job? Absolutely. That's what people don't tell you about entrepreneurship, right? Okay, so I'm just going to walk you through this. Like, you start off with something you love, right? oh, if I could only do this all the time, you know, I'm going to do my teaching gig during the day. I'm going to do this evenings and weekends. It's awesome because I love doing this thing. All of a sudden, this thing earns you more money than your teaching gig did. You quit your teaching gig, and then now you're doing your thing that you love full time. But what you miss is that that thing that you love that you're now doing full time now becomes your job. And so, like, this is the reality is like, okay, now I got to get up every day and do this thing that I used to love. Now I got to do it. And you know what? If I don't want to do it all the time, I got to hire somebody to do something that was the thing that I love. And now I got to manage that person to do the thing that I love. That was eight, they can only do it like 80%. So they're doing a crap job of the thing that I love that I quit my job to go do. So it's like, what's the end goal, right? The end goal for me is to really be able to add value, make a difference, and do the best that I can within my capabilities. And so I'm always looking to improve myself. I'm always looking to get better. And by getting better and being interested in the world changing and what's happening, I get tremendous fulfillment from that. So the why, I don't have another choice.
That's very scary, Dave, that you just described during the school year, you know, middle school teacher by day and entrepreneur, podcaster, nor whatever by night. And now that it's suddenly the summertime, it's that teaching job is, I didn't take it away, but you're not going there. And now the microphone is your full-time gig and you're like doing it all day. And you're like, I can't wait. I'm the only teacher that's sitting going, I can't wait until the summer or till the summertime is over because I want to get back into the classroom. So that way this doesn't have to rule my life. But at the same time, it's like, but I've waited all school year to do this.
it's perspective, right? Like it's, and when you're doing the thing, that's the hardest part about entrepreneurship, honestly, yep. is doing the thing, whatever that thing is. Doing that thing is and staying with it and not being distracted by the shiny object, whatever that shiny object is. Because you know what, when you're in the thing, okay, so you start teaching, you then podcast, you're doing podcasting, and say you didn't go back in September or whenever to your teaching gig. There's going to be something else that is going to be like, hey, that's the new thing I'm going to do evenings and weekends because my podcasting is now the gig that I do.
Yep.
9 to 5.
Yep.
And so, and then you do the next thing, and then you do the next thing, and then you do the like, being able to stay focused and be disciplined about what you do and do the hard work, the repetitive work, the boring work is really the superpower. Like when you think about any professional athlete, amazing professional athlete, like Michael Phelps or Michael Jordan or any of the other Michaels, you know, they do the repetitive work, like 5 hours in the pool before noon or Michael Jordan shooting 1,000 free throws or whatever it may be. And it's every single day. I heard somewhere, and I apologize that I can't think of where the quote came from, but it's the ability to deal with the boring.
Yeah.
That is their superpower.
Yep.
And that applies to being an entrepreneur too. If you can deal with the monotony of talking to podcast guests, as I'm trashing myself on this, but you know what I mean? It's, then you will have the ability to be tremendously successful.
Well, and that's when I started pivoting to building systems for people because nobody wants to sit and do all of the work. And let's face it, the people who are listening to us now are not able to go. I mean, maybe there's a few, but they're not buying executive assistants to go do the labor of the job, right? So we mentioned Notion. Notion now runs my business. It's got everything automated. I put your name into a form and it automatically spits out everything. And here's the show notes and it's great. Same thing with the email, same thing with this. And that's when I found a second hobby, which was teaching people how to build their systems. And now I'm presenting on building a system. And I'm hoping that the next book is going to be how do you build these systems for your side hustles and stuff like that. And and because that's, again, when you're dealing with it this long, I know we've had a long conversation. I want to ask you one last question here, if we can here. And that's all about this concept of using AI for those things you don't want to do. And I know you had mentioned that you were a beta tester of all these things. First of all, do you have a favorite? I know this isn't a fair question to ask because they're all different. But I mean, between the ChatGPTs, the Copilots, the Geminis, the Claudes, the Notions, the out of those LLMs, do you have one that you favor more as a marketer? And how do you use AI to create systems, build systems, to give you or somebody that free time that they need each day?
Yeah, I use AI all day, every day. Have forever now, it seems like, but really it's just been since whatever it was, November 30th, 2022, like everybody else when ChatGPT came on the scene. So do I have a favorite tool? Yes, I would say ChatGPT is my favorite tool, OpenAI, but it's more than just ChatGPT that people think of. So I'm actually a bit more of a power user of it. So I've got API access. If you don't know what that is, basically backend access to the large language model. I am a pro user. So I pay $200 a month to have the ability to be able to do deep research, to use Operator, to use all these other functionalities. So OpenAI is building trying to build an all-encompassing tool for people to use. So they're where I've kind of invested. Google is also, Claude is behind. So, but there's a bunch of different tools that I use in different situations. So for example, the best LLM augmented search, so search with LLMs attached to it, is a tool called Perplexity right now. From my perspective, this is just my opinion, it is the best one. It's better than OpenAI with search. It's better with Google with Gemini. It's right now the best, most accurate version, but it'll change when the next model comes out. So that's the first thing, is picking your tool. Second thing is using these tools to make your life easier. So there's a lot of frameworks, and the tools are great, because even if you go into ChatGPT and you're like, tell me how Notion can make my life easier in this situation, it will give you a list of ways that Notion could use it. You pick one of those and be like, okay, build me a Notion, description for this. And then, you know, how do I then plug this Notion into my system that I'm using Google Docs? And it will automatically do that. I'm using Jot Forms for my form. You can basically use the tool to tell you how to do everything that you want it to do. And all you have to do is implement, and it'll implement half the time. So for me, the best tool is the tool that you will use, is the first thing. Beyond that is the tool that can help you do the most things across the most ways. So right now, ChatGPT is great at image recognition. We can drop, with the ad agency, we can drop ads into it and say, analyze this ad. Is it good for conversion? Can you make recommendations? I'm a bank. Here's some bank ads. From a teacher's perspective, for example, and the stuff on the Teachers Pay Teachers, we're building EQAO tests, this product that we put up there. So that's the Ontario curriculum has standardized testing in grade 3 and grade 6. And these are tests that we put up through Google Forms that basically have the ability to be able to, choose different things like testing. And so we built those using AI. And so built them, put them up. They're accurate. They're great. We get 5-star reviews and all that kind of stuff. So actually using the tool to build products that generate revenue. And I'm not a teacher, but I can build these things. So that's the main thing, where right now, just staying on top of it. Oh, the other thing that might be helpful to your audience is people ask me, where do I stay on top of these things, all these different generations, all this different stuff that's happening with AI? I actually stay on X, Twitter. Twitter has a noise problem, 100%. But if you go and you sign up and you actually just follow people in your niche, whether it's teachers, there's lots of teachers on there, whether it's AI, there's lots of AI people on there, and you just follow in your niche, it then creates a very valuable feed for you that you can actually use. Otherwise, it's just noise and politics and a bunch of other stuff that, if you have time, go for it, but I don't have time for that. So yeah, that's the other thing, is how to use that tool.
Going to make sure that we have all the links that we've been discussing today to everything, including his Teachers Pay Teachers tour, on our show notes today. So check out everything over at teachercast.net/podcasts. Dave, look, you're an amazing guy. I would love to have you on for a second, third, and maybe even 15th episode, because we could have these conversations all day. So I totally appreciate you coming on and sharing a little bit of your expertise. Last question here. I'm sure this is going to be a popular one. Have you ever thought about pivoting back into alcohol sales to college kids?
No, I haven't. I actually stopped drinking in 2021. My kids were in their late teens and getting to the age where they were getting to that stage. And I thought, I'm going to stop drinking. they're going to drink enough for all of us. So I haven't thought about it, but there's some great companies out there that I'm sure will do that and will continue to do so in the future. So
you can find more information about the great things that Dave is doing over at aokmarketing.com. And of course, if you want to check out some of his other adventures, you can head on over to promotionalproducts.com, and we'll make sure that we have a link to his Teachers Pay Teachers store also in our show notes. You can find that over on teachercast.net/podcast. Dave Burnett, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate having you on, and please come back on the show soon.
I will do. Thanks so much, Jeff. I appreciate it. And thank you everybody for listening. Hopefully you got a little something from it, and I'll look forward to hearing, and feel free to connect with me, and I look forward to hearing from all your adventures. That'll be great.
This is the first time you're checking out our episode. Please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button, and you can find out all of our shows over on teachercast.net/podcast. We're available on iTunes, Spotify, and of course on YouTube. You can find all of our videos. And that it wraps up this episode of the Jeff Bradbury Show. On behalf of Dave and everybody here on TeacherCast, my name is Jeff Bradbury, reminding you guys to keep up the great work in your classrooms and continue sharing your passions with your students.
You've been listening to the TeacherCast Educational Network, hosted by Jeff Bradbury. Please reach out to the show with all of your questions on Twitter at TeacherCast or online at www.teachercast.net. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. And please take a moment to write a review in the App Store.